Good evening. We're going to be talking about Solomon today. And last week we talked about Solomon's youth, and really in his when he was young and became king, he made a lot of good choices, and there was a lot of blessings related to those choices. One of the things he did that was exceptional was when he became king, he went and offered sacrifice to the Lord. And the Lord appeared to him and said, "What would you want?" And he asked for wisdom. And because he asked for wisdom, God said that was the right answer. So he gave him wisdom. And what it says, he gave him a discerning mind. So he's able to understand wisdom and justice, because that's really what he wanted to be able to do, is to lead in a just way, to lead God's people in a just way. But he also said, you'll also get reputation and honor and wealth and security and everything that you would want as a king, I'm also going to give to you because you asked for wisdom. So that was in the beginning of his reign. You really see some things like that going on. He was very wise. He built the temple of God. He honored God greatly in what he did. When he first became king, he offered, I think, 1,000 bulls at the temple in Gibeah, whatever it was. And then when he finished the temple, he offered, I believe, 20,000 bulls and 120,000 sheep. So, I mean, just sacrifices, lots of sacrifices. And then you hear about how he had a feast for 7 days. I imagine you're feeding a lot of people with that much meat going around. So you just see he honored God greatly in the beginning of his life. But we also see that even though he had a lot of good qualities, there was some problems with his heart. And that's what we're going to begin looking at today. We looked a little bit at the problem of his heart. And where we ended last week, actually, we were just looking at, you know, there are some clear scriptural things about what God wants us to do, the condition of our heart and things like that. And Solomon just, he said, for a king, what I want you to do is don't marry too many wives, don't go to Egypt to get horses, which that seems pretty specific. And that's exactly what Solomon did. Don't amass wealth for yourself. So he said, God gave some pretty specific things for the king. And Solomon went exactly against all those things. So total fail when it came to doing those things. Solomon just he just didn't do the right thing. But you see a conflict in him. So I want to, I guess the scripture that comes to mind, don't know the verse, but it just said that Solomon didn't serve God fully, wholly, as his father David did. And really, I think that's a pretty good description, is he partly served God, but he didn't serve God wholly. And we're going to see what's the end result of that type of service. What's the end result of that weak dedication to serving God? Because it really makes you think about, what did God ask? He asked for our whole heart. He didn't ask for a part of our heart. And so Solomon had some troubles there. However, Solomon was a very renowned king. He did a lot of good. He was very wise. I mean, incredibly wise, as we start reading this. And that's where I want to begin tonight, is I just want to examine Solomon's wisdom. So let's go and open our Bibles to 1 Kings chapter 3. We'll read verse 12. 1 Kings 3:12. Behold, I have done according... Oh, so Solomon asked for the ability. I'll start in 11, I guess. God said to him, because you have asked this thing and have not asked for yourself a long life, nor have you asked riches for yourself, nor have you asked for the life of your enemies, but you have asked for yourself discernment to understand justice. Behold, I have done according to your words. Behold, I have given you a wise and discerning heart, so that there has been no one like you before you, nor shall one like you arise after you. So here God says, I have given you a discerning heart. I think this is just kind of an interesting little detail in here. Is he asked for a heart to be able to discern justice. Now, the kind of the Hebrew word root for this word discern is hearing. I want to be able to hear. You know, there's a difference between, I guess maybe we might say there's a difference between hearing and listening. Hearing, the noise is, you know there's noise. Listening, you know what the noise is about. And it's kind of like, that's what Solomon wanted to be able to. I don't just want to hear noise. I want to understand the noise. I want to comprehend. I want to pick up on the details of things. I want to be able to distinguish between right and wrong, between just and unjust, to be able to see through the facade of things to the truth of things. That's what he asked for, particularly according to justice. And God says, I'll give that to you. Now, he actually brought into his discernment in many areas, and we'll see that, but that's where it begins. So here is an example of Solomon's ability to discern justice. In 1 Kings chapter 3, starting in verse 16, this is the famous story of Solomon's wisdom. Then two women who were harlots came and stood before him. The one said, O my Lord, this woman and I live in the same house, and I gave birth to a child while she was in the house. It happened on the third day after I gave birth that this woman also gave birth to a child, and we were together. There was no stranger with us in the house, only the two of us in the house. This woman's son died in the night because she lay on it. So she arose in the middle of the night and took my son from beside me while your maidservant slept, and laid him in her bosom, and laid her dead son in my bosom. When I rose in the morning to nurse my son, behold, he was dead. But when I looked at him carefully in the morning, behold, he was not my son whom I had born. Then the other woman said, No, for the living one is mine, and the dead one is your son. But the first woman said, No, for the dead one is your son, and the living one is my son. Thus they spoke before the king. Then the king said, The one says, This is my son who is living, and your son is the dead one. And the other says, No, for your son is the dead one, and my son is the living one. Then the king said, Get me a sword. So they brought a sword before the king. The king said, Divide the living child in two, and give half to the one and half to the other. Then the woman whose child was the living one spoke to the king, for she was deeply stirred over her son, and said, O my Lord, give her the living child, and by no means kill him. But the other said, He shall neither be mine nor yours, divide him. The king said, Give the first woman the living child, and by no means kill him, she is his mother. So here you just see him listening to this, and you know, what thought had to go through his mind? If you were trying to sort that out, No, that's my baby. No, that's my baby. How do you even tell? We might say, let's do a DNA test or something, right, like that, right? That's how we would maybe discern that out. But they didn't have that. So Solomon, he didn't think about, how do I solve the problem in front of me? He thought about, what would a mother do? And after he thought about, what would a mother do, he set up a situation to find out who the mother was. You know, that's what wisdom is, right? It's being able to not to be able to think past the thing that's in front of you into more the core of an issue. The core of the issue is the mother wanted her son back. And so the mother would definitely never concede to having her son killed. She'd rather him live with somebody else than be killed. And so in this situation, you see him just being able to discern. I don't think this is the only wise thing he did. But this is where God said, I'll give you the ability to discern justice. Here is an example of a very hard case, and yet he was able to discern it. I don't know if there's any significance to the fact that both of these women were pretty lowly women, and they still were able to get a hearing before the king. That's also something that maybe is significant, but I found that as an interesting element to this. But either way, we see his wisdom and ability to discern. Now, what was the impact of that? Verse 28. When all Israel heard the judgment which the king had handed down, they feared the king, for they saw that the wisdom of God was in him to administer justice. So here you see, are you going to be trying to scam the king at this point? Right? I mean, except for the weight of the situation, you know, you have women arguing over a live and a dead baby. Like, that's a pretty weighty matter. But it almost seems like a Judge Judy case here. I mean, in ways, like, because they're just arguing with each other. It's just the way you would imagine it happening. But he's able to have the wisdom to see through that. But now everyone knows, okay, we don't mess with Solomon. You don't bring frivolous cases to the king, and you don't try and deceive him, because he's going to see through the deceit. But it says they feared the king here. What does it mean to fear in this context? That might be, that might. Oh, okay. Is that cheating? No. No, yeah, so that's it. They were, how would we say that? They respected his ability to discern. They were more cautious because of his ability to discern.
One side of the coin, if you were achieving a thing, you would have reason to fear Solomon. But if you were an honest, hardworking person that was just trying to take care of your job, you're not going to have fear for him. You're going to have respect and reassurance that if you have to go before him, you're going to get a fair deal. You're going to get a good judgment. So I guess there's two different ways of approaching it, depending on who.
They understood that he was going to find the truth, and that he would deal with it on terms of truth. So like you said, if you're someone who's doing right, you could have confidence, the king will give me justice. And if you are someone who is doing wrong, you could have confidence, the king will see through the lie. Now, when we talk about, the reason I bring that up, we talk about fearing God. This is kind of a context that's away from God, because there's other things, emotions we attach to God. So it's hard when we say fear God, what does that mean? Here you just have a king, and you have this king's ability to see the truth and to act justly. So you know if you deserve a punishment, you're going to get it. And if you don't deserve a punishment, you won't get it. So now we say but this is the same context. Right? This is the idea of fearing God. Is people who do well have no reason to fear God. Although you do respect him, you fear him in the sense that I know he will do right by me. I know he will uphold my case. But if you're doing wrong, you fear God, because I know he will bring justice on my transgression. So that's the idea of fearing God, is knowing who he is and showing a level of respect because of his discernment, and God's is an order of magnitude greater than Solomon.
New American Standard says at the end of the verse, for the people, for they saw that the wisdom of God was in him to administer justice. So they saw him as God's representative who was guided by God.
Yeah.
And that might have been another reason for them to fear.
Yeah, they understood God was helping him, and that he was going to, really he was acting as a good agent of God, right? So in a sense, Jesus was a good agent of God, better than Solomon, but that's what they recognized him as being. So that's a great point. I just think that's just an interesting thing I thought I wanted to stop on for a moment, is just to see, kind of see that. And also his just ability, this is what God granted him. This is what Solomon asked for. This is what God granted him. So now we're going to say, and what else did God grant him? Look with me at chapter 4, verse 29. We're going to read 29 through 34. Now God gave Solomon wisdom and very great discernment and breadth of mind, like the sand that is on the seashore. Solomon's wisdom surpassed the wisdom of all the sons of the east and all the wisdom of Egypt. For he was wiser than all men, than Ethan the Ezrahite, Haman, Chalcol, and Darda, the sons of Mahal. And his fame was known in all the surrounding regions. He also spoke 3,000 proverbs, and his songs were 1,005. He spoke of trees, from the cedar that is in Lebanon, even to the hyssop that grows on the wall. He spoke of animals and birds and creeping things and fish. Men came from all peoples to hear the wisdom of Solomon, for all the kings of the earth who had heard of, for all the kings of the earth who had hit, from all the kings of the earth who had heard of his wisdom. I think just think that's an interesting little, you know, little paragraph there. He gave him breadth of discernment, very great. What does it say? Very great discernment and breadth of mind. His mind was not limited. You know, it's one of those things. I was listening. I can't remember the guy's name. I was listening to a podcast. It was talking about why people believe that Christianity and science oppose each other. You have to choose one or the other. And so he was just talking about kind of the historical thought that kind of brought that to be. But he was just talking about the early scientists. He's like, this guy, he was a chemist, but he also was the first guy to take a picture of the moon. And it kind of just went on. I mean, it was just this whole random spread of things that this guy had contributed to science in. And it was just, you know, he had breadth of mind, right? He just had this huge scope of intelligence, which went to all different areas. You know, you think about like Thomas Edison, he invented so many things, or Benjamin Franklin. You know, we have men that we think, but Solomon was beyond that. And he was able to look at any little thing. He saw the things that everyone else would overlook. And when he saw it, he was able to discern wisdom out of it. It wasn't just that he noticed something that no one else would notice. He noticed it and then drew wisdom from it and was able to verbalize it in a way that it was worth preserving. You know, sometimes you'll see something and you'll say it and then you'll be like, that sounded better in my head. Right? And so, you know, we're not like Solomon, but Solomon has this ability to notice things on a broad spectrum. Also, he had put quite a bit of effort into learning, so he just applied himself to learning. And you know, he's one of those guys, when you read something, he didn't just read it, and it wasn't like he just read it and memorized it and could recite it. He read it and understood it and could do it. He's one of those guys who could just read something and then be able to go do it afterwards. It seems like that's the type of guy he was. So he just was very wise. And as you start seeing descriptions of his wisdom, it was in decorations and in clothing and in ordering things and in building things and in leadership things. And so you just start going through all the areas where Solomon made added artistically. So he wasn't like a, you know, sometimes I'm an engineer or I'm an artist. No, he was both. And so you just had this really great understanding. And then it starts going through. He was wiser. And I have no idea who these guys are that they're talking about, who the guys who he is wiser than. But somebody knew, and it must have been impressive. That's all I can say. If somebody knew, in fact, a few of these guys, like the sons of Mahal, he had five sons, but three of them were renowned, wise men. And then you start seeing all the wisdom of Egypt. That's pretty significant. In fact, something I had read, I don't know, I didn't verify, but I just thought it was an interesting thought, is Abraham came from Ur of Chaldees, and that's really where math was kind of invented and was really well known. And they believe when he went to Egypt that Abraham taught the Egyptians math. And so all the math that they used to build the pyramids, they believe, came from Abraham. I don't know if that's true or not, but I just thought it was kind of an interesting observation. But it's just one of those things, you know, it was how does wisdom travel in those early days right after the flood and education, all those things. But regardless, whether you're from the Ur of Chaldees, that's the east, right, the Babylonian region, or Egypt, where there's other great wisdom, his wisdom excelled from all of that. He added to what he knew it, and then he exceeded it. I don't know how many Proverbs we have, but I know we don't have 1,000 Songs of Solomon. We have one at least for sure. There's probably a few other in there, but you know, his 3,000 Proverbs, and you just see this. He was just incredibly wise. I mean, just it's amazing as you start reading through this. What he did. So this is just kind of the overview. How wise was Solomon? Well, he did all these things. Now let's look over 2 Chronicles 8. Actually, I'm not going to read the chapter. Essentially, This is talking about Solomon's building projects. So in 2 Chronicles 8, it says that he built the temple. Now the temple is just something I was thinking about. When they built the tabernacle, there was a couple of guys, and it says God inspired them in every form of artistry. And when they came up with a design to go into the temple, it was from the mind of God. So the way some men are inspired to write the Bible, their designs were inspired to build the tabernacle. And it appears that because of the wisdom God gave Solomon, that the temple was probably kind of along the same lines, where God wanted Solomon to build it. Probably the designs in the temple were inspired. Solomon was inspired by God to do those things. And so the temple was a... It wasn't something that was... It's one of those things where every detail was looked to. There was nothing left undone. There was nothing overlooked. It was just meticulously done. And even to the point, they didn't even quarry the rocks on site. They quarried them off site and brought them in. Now you start saying, well, how do you keep track of all the rocks? That's a lot of rocks to move, right? That's a lot of rocks to quarry and bring in and get them in order. Solomon probably came up with a system on how to do that. That's the thing, is he's so wise. Every part of these building projects, he had input, he designed, he figured out how we're going to do it. He was the mastermind behind all of this. So when we talk about his building projects, and you really see him elaborate on this in the book of Ecclesiastes, about when he describes how he did building things, he says, everything I did with the utmost wisdom. Everything I built. And I built all kinds of different things. Gardens and buildings and cities and whatever it is. But I did everything with my wisdom guiding me. And so as we start reading, temples, houses, fortified cities, storage cities, he went and made all the his enemies, so the Canaanites, the Amorites, the Perizzites, the Jebusites that were left in the land, he went and just enslaved them all and used them for forced labor. He wouldn't use anyone from Israel as forced labor. He would let them serve in the military, but not forced labor. So he went and got all his enemies. He established sea trade. So he bought a fleet of ships that started out over, I think, in the Red Sea by Edom. And they were bringing in, I mean, just tons of gold. So you just, I mean, just he was just a very elaborate. So sea trade, he set up a massive leadership to oversee every part of the country. I think there were 250 leaders or governors or whatever you want to call it. He had military barracks, military cities, chariots, armaments, like, I mean, the whole thing. And God said, I'm going to give you from the river next to Egypt all the way up to the river Euphrates. And Solomon's kingdom spanned that whole region. So he took control of the whole of God's promised land, and he operated it very efficiently. He reached out into trade, and so they were already on a primary trade route that went right through there. So they had land trade, and he supplemented that by going out and getting sea trade and bringing in exotic animals. And gold and spices, and so it was just all sorts of things going on in that. So here in 1 Kings 10, we see an example. We saw an example of his justice, his ability to discern justice. Now we're going to see an example of what the kings that traveled to see him would have experienced when they met Solomon. So the Queen of Sheba here is an example of a foreign dignitary coming to Solomon to test his wisdom, and not just being impressed, being overwhelmed. And we'll note some of the things she says about him. So 1 Kings chapter 10, verse 1. Now when the Queen of Sheba heard about the fame of Solomon concerning the name of the Lord, she came to test him with difficult questions. So she came to Jerusalem with a very large retinue, with camels carrying spices and very much gold and precious stones. When she came to Solomon, she spoke with him about all that was on her heart. Solomon answered her all her questions. Nothing was hidden from the king which he did not explain to her. When the Queen of Sheba perceived all the wisdom of Solomon, when she's perceived all the wisdom of Solomon, well, what are we talking about? The house that he built. So she looked at his house and said, how did he figure this out? Right? The house that he built. The food on the table. So Solomon had wisdom. He was a chef. Right? How does the food on the table reflect his wisdom? Well, there's a supply chain element, but also cooking, right? He had wisdom in every area. He was a chef. They made good food, maybe food she's never had before. So the food on the table, the seating of his servants. How is that impressive? Okay, I want you to sit here. Why? Because that is the premium spot for you. I don't know why the seating of the servants was so impressive to her. It's just interesting, the things. The attendance of the waiters and their clothing. So the way they attended, the way they clothed. And so you say, have you ever had a really good waitress? Yeah. What do they do that's different, that makes them good?
They interact with you. They're concerned about what you want.
They make you feel like they care about you. They're concerned about what you want. They make sure your cup is full. If you're at Red Robin, you never run out of French fries, right? So, you know, there are certain things. And so Solomon figured that out, and he trained his people to do that. And so hospitality, he was a genius in hospitality. You know, you just start going through the things that she mentions about him, their clothing. So, you know, you start saying, well, how advanced had clothing got at that point in time? Style and how to sew. Well, he figured out some techniques or whatever that were impressive that this queen had never seen. His cupbearers, I don't know how that's impressive. His stairway by which he went up to the house of the Lord. The stairway. Now, it talks about in another place, in I think it's in Chronicles, how he brought these particular kind of trees on ships, and I don't know what kind of wood they were, but he inlaid all the stairs with this kind of wood. So I don't know if it was meticulously carved or if it was like, you know, all the little pieces put together. But there was something about the stairway leading up to the house of the Lord that was unique and meticulous and just impressive. So the stairway, which he went up to the house of the Lord, there, when she saw all these things, there was no more spirit in her. Then she said to the king, It was a true report which I heard in my own land about your words and your wisdom. Nevertheless, I did not believe the reports until I came and my own eyes had seen it. And behold, the half was not told to me. You exceed in wisdom and prosperity the report. You exceed in wisdom and prosperity the report which I had heard. How blessed are your men! How blessed are your servants who stand before you continually and hear your wisdom. Blessed be the Lord your God, who delighted in you to set you on the throne of Israel, because the Lord loved Israel forever. Therefore, he made you king to do justice and righteousness. So here you just see this response. The Spirit left her. She was just overwhelmed. She's like, there is nothing I can criticize. In fact, I have to praise him beyond what I was planning, because he's so much better than I expected. Now, if you want to just pause for a moment, when we talk about how we present ourselves as a church, when people come in to worship with us, we want to project excellence, because excellence inspires people and honors God. This is what happens when you do things with excellence. How did she respond? She started praising God for the wisdom and the excellence in which things are done. And I just think that's something, you know, as we try to present ourselves as a church and the way we do things, the way we go about things, the more we do it with wisdom and excellence and care, as Solomon did, some pagan queen came and praised God because the way he conducted himself. And that's true about us as well. It's not just the way we conduct ourselves as a church, it's the way we conduct ourselves personally. If we conduct ourselves with excellence, with godliness, with wisdom, that's what letting your light shine looks like. Right? And we're following after God's, we're using God's wisdom to do everything we do. And really that's what Solomon was doing. So there's just a little side note in that, but I just think when someone comes to visit our congregation, this is how I want them to respond. Is praise the Lord. They, you know, that's kind of the idea there. So let's continue on. Verse 10. She gave the king, this is 1 Kings 10:10. She gave the king 120 talents of gold and very great amount of spices and precious stones. Never again did such an abundance of spice come in as that which the queen of Sheba gave Solomon. So here's she gave, spice was a bigger deal back then, apparently, but it's interesting. I mean, that's a lot of spice. To make a comment, there's never as much spice as there was in that. I don't know how much spice you can carry on camels, but it sounds like, I mean, that's also an impressive gift. And it's so, yeah, that is an impressive gift. So here we see, in verse 12, we start talk about trade and, or anyway, we see trade. And there's other things that Solomon did. Jump down to 10 verse 23 now. So Solomon became greater than all the kings of the earth in riches and in wisdom. All the earth was seeking the presence of Solomon to hear his wisdom, his wisdom which God had put in his heart. So now he's greater than all the kings of the earth. He's richer than all the kings of the earth. And every other kingdom on earth, it's kind of like their dream is to be able to come and sit and talk with Solomon. So it's like he's a celebrity king in all the earth. What an amazing thing. If you think about just God saying, I will give you discernment. It's a gift that the Lord gave him. And what was the outcome of that? And you start saying, well, how did all this happen? How did this renown happen? How did this wealth happen? How did this wisdom happen? How did it all happen? God says, I'm going to give it to you. And he did. It's just that easy. Because whatever we read here about Solomon is nothing compared to God. And that's an important point, an important thing to remember. Whatever we read about Solomon is nothing compared to God. So let's go ahead and take a look. I want to get some perspective about Solomon's wisdom now. Matthew chapter 12, Matthew 12, verse 42. Says, the queen of the south will rise up with this generation at the judgment and will condemn it, because she came from the ends of the earth to hear the wisdom of Solomon. And behold, something greater than Solomon is here. Isn't that an interesting statement? The queen of the south brought all this treasure to Solomon in order to hear his wisdom. And she only thought it was half as good as it actually was. But that's what she came to do. And Jesus says, you guys are rejecting me, even though I'm greater than Solomon. So that queen, that pagan queen, is going to condemn you in judgment day. But then it just makes you ask the question, what does that say about Jesus? If this is the response people get when going to visit Solomon, what must it have been like to listen to Jesus teach? To listen to Jesus. Because what Solomon did was very earth-based, right? You read Ecclesiastes. He turned out, he said, I did all these things, vanity, worthless. Doesn't produce a thing. Someone else is going to get it. I'm going to die. It's pretty much doesn't accomplish anything to do all these things. Now, everything Solomon did in a physical sense, Jesus did, but in a spiritual sense. Every piece of wisdom Solomon employed physically, Jesus employed spiritually. And he's greater than Solomon. His wisdom is better, more lasting, more reassuring, all those things. So Jesus was greater than Solomon. It just gives you another perspective. You read this impressive statement about Solomon, Jesus was better. Jesus was wiser. He was greater than Solomon. 1 Corinthians 1, starting in verse 21. For since in the wisdom of God, the world through its wisdom did not come to know God. God was well pleased through the foolishness of the message preached to save those who believed. For indeed, Jews ask for signs and Greeks thirst for wisdom, but we preach Christ crucified. To the Jews a stumbling block, and to Gentiles foolishness. But to those who are called both Jews and Greeks, Christ the power of God and the wisdom of God. Because the foolishness of God is greater, the foolishness of God is wiser than men, and the weakness of God is stronger than men. So here you just see Paul just talking about God doesn't, most foolish thing God will ever do is so far beyond men's ability to comprehend. So, sure, the wisdom of the Greeks and the wisdom of the Jews call Jesus Christ crucified a bunch of garbage. Total foolishness. But God's going to accomplish more in that foolishness than they ever could. Because they could never even discover what God was doing. And so you just see, you know, anything wisdom did, Solomon did in wisdom was foolishness to God. Wasn't even close to what God accomplishes. And so look in verse 26. For consider your calling, brethren. There were not many wise, according to the flesh, nor many mighty, nor many noble, but God has chosen the foolish things of the world to shame the wise. God has chosen the weak things of the world to shame the things which are strong, and the base things of the world and the despised God has chosen, that the things that are not, so that he may nullify the things that are, so that no man may boast before God. But by his doing you are in Christ Jesus, who became to us wisdom from God and righteousness and sanctification and redemption, so that just as it is written, let him who boasts boast in the Lord. Here's just an interesting thought. The way God likes to show his wisdom is by taking something foolish and weak and marginalized and unnoticed and using that to accomplish something greater than man ever could. And sometimes we might think, man, I wish I was as wise as Solomon. But the reality is, God doesn't care if you're wise. He just cares if you're faithful. Well, he wants you to be wise. But that's not what he needs you to be. He needs you to be faithful. And if you're faithful, he can work through you. And even if everyone else wants to marginalize you, everyone else wants to count you out, God can use a faithful person. And so, you know, and he can use you more effectively than he could use Solomon. And as we start looking at the downfall of Solomon, all the wisdom he had, he still turned away from God. But he said, consider yourselves, there were not many wise among you. There were not many strong, and you guys were weak. You guys were not the cream of the crop. And yet, that's what God chose to use to bring salvation to the world. And you just see, I just think this is just an interesting contrast here, where you think, what are the advantages Solomon had? And we have better advantages. We are able to do more. We're able to build a better kingdom. We're able to bring to bear more wisdom because we don't seek to boast in ourselves. We seek to boast in the Lord. And that's where Solomon fell short. He didn't boast in the Lord. He started using his wisdom to attribute these things to other gods and decided, I know better, so I'm going to go against the wisdom of the Lord. And it's in these areas where Solomon clearly went against what God said was good that led to his downfall. The places where he said, I know better than God. So if we just follow God and trust in him, then we can do better than that. And the last one I want to look at is in Matthew chapter 6, verse 28. And I just like this comparison as well. I mean, I guess I've made it three times, but I like this one. Jesus says, why are you worried about clothing? Observe how the lilies of the field grow. They do not toil, nor do they spin. Yet I say to you that even Solomon in all his glory, clothed himself like one of these. But if God so clothes the grass of the field, which is alive today, and tomorrow is thrown into the furnace, will he not much more clothe you, you of little faith? And here again, what is he saying? God did more with one flower than Solomon in all his wisdom could ever figure out. And what did the Queen of Sheba say about Solomon? One of the areas of his wisdom. How he dressed. How his servants dressed. Not just how he dressed, how his servants dressed was very impressive. I imagine he wore better clothes than his servants. And what Jesus said? The little flower that gets withered and burned up and only lasts a couple of days. God showed more wisdom in making that thing pretty than Solomon could ever figure out how to do. Because God is so much greater. He's like, have faith in God. Put your faith in Him. And here you just see the same contrast, right? Is don't trust in man's wisdom. Don't worry about, don't let these things, God will provide for you. You need to trust in Him. And I just think this is just another interesting contrast that you know, God is better than Solomon. That's really what we're saying over and over again. So, it says the wisdom of Solomon. It really should say the Solomon's downfall. Solomon's weakness and sinfulness, I think is what I would have titled it. I think this one I titled it, and I forgot to change this one. All right. Solomon's sinfulness. So 1 Kings 11, verse 1. Now Solomon loved many foreign women, along with the daughter of Pharaoh, Moabite, Ammonite, Edomite, Sidonian, and Hittite women. From the nations concerning which the Lord said to the sons of Israel, you shall not associate with them, nor shall they associate with you, for they will surely turn your heart away from their heart away after their gods. Solomon held fast to these in love. He had 700 wives, princesses, and 300 concubines, and his wives turned his heart away. It's an interesting thing. For as wise as he was, he had all these wives. And the Lord just simply said, don't go after those. Don't do that. They're going to turn your heart away. And guess what? Solomon, all his wisdom, all his prestige, all his ability, his heart got turned away. Turns out God was right. You know, it's just one of those things where it's just interesting. You read that and you just see, you know, God's wisdom, don't throw it away. Don't marginalize what God has to say. I think we can learn from what God has to say here. In fact, I had a couple questions I wanted to ask, but we're past there. I don't think we have time for it anyway. 1 Kings 11, verse 4. For when Solomon was old, his wives turned his heart away after other gods, and his heart was not wholly devoted to the Lord his God, as the heart of David his father had been. For Solomon went after the Ashtoreth, the goddess of the Sidonians, after Milcom, the detestable idol of the Ammonites. Solomon did what was evil in the sight of the Lord, and did not follow the Lord fully, as David his father had done. Then Solomon built a high place for Chemosh, the detestable idol of Moab, on the mountain which is east of Jerusalem, and for Molech, the detestable idol of the sons of Ammon. Thus he did for all his foreign wives who burned incense and sacrificed to their gods. So here you just see this little section that Solomon didn't just build the house of the Lord and all these other things. He started building temples to these idols. And on one hand, you might think, well, maybe Solomon just didn't realize, or maybe he didn't know what this was going to lead to, or maybe he thought he could control it or whatever it is. Read with me in Leviticus chapter 20 and verse 1. Now this was about, probably written about 400 years before Solomon, so this is, you know, this has been known for a while. Leviticus 20, starting in verse 1. The Lord spoke to Moses, saying, you shall also say to the sons of Israel, any man from the sons of Israel or from the alien sojourning in Israel who gives any of his offspring to Molech shall surely be put to death. The people of the land shall stone him with stones. I will also set my face against that man. I will cut him off from among his people because he has given some of his offspring to Molech so as to defile my sanctuary and to profane my holy name. If the people of the land, however, should ever disregard that a man that man, when he gives his offspring to Molech, so as not to put him to death, then I myself will set my face against that man and against his family, and I will cut off from among cut off from among their people, both him and all those who play the harlot after him, by playing the harlot after Molech. 400 years earlier, God said explicitly, don't worship Molech. And so here, Solomon, in all his wisdom, what are we going to do, guys? Hey, let's start worshiping Molech. You know, this wife of mine, or this group of wives of mine, whatever it was, they like Molech, so let's go ahead and build a Molech. What happens at Molech? Solomon knew. Child sacrifice. What kind of disposition of the worship that thinks killing babies and really burning babies alive is a good thing and is going to bring blessing to your life? Would you call that evil? Would you call that the darkest kind of dark magic or whatever they juju or whatever they're doing? Like, it's the darkest kind of stuff. If the end of the road is killing your babies, what else do you suppose is included in there? Nothing good. I mean, when you start thinking about, like, you know, in, what is it, in Haiti, there's a lot of this dark magic or whatever they do, and they're like, you know, they just blood sacrifices and killing, reading chicken guts and for the future, and there's just all sorts of disgusting things that are tied up in that. And Solomon knew, and he thought, hey, I'm gonna bring this in. He probably didn't just build the altar. He probably imported priests and set up worship. I mean, there's a whole, when you put in a temple, there's a whole infrastructure that goes along with that. And one of the reasons why Israel was judged by God in such a harsh way when it was, partly because Solomon set up that idol. And the blood was, Jerusalem was filled with blood. King Manasseh offered his own sons on that idol a few generations down the road. We'll talk about that in a bit. And so, but here it says he did these things. And how can you, after having conversations with God multiple times and being blessed by God and being told, here's what's going to happen, then you see it happen, and then you start saying, oh, this guy probably contributed a little bit, and this guy over here, you know, these things, and he, I don't know, it just doesn't, you know, what you just see over time, this arrogance. And so he just went after these gods and decided he was going to worship them and turned away from God. So verse 9, now the Lord was angry with, this is 1 Kings 11:9. Now the Lord was angry with Solomon because his heart was turned away from the Lord, the God of Israel, who had appeared to him twice and had commanded him concerning this thing, that he should not go after other gods, but he did not observe what the Lord had commanded him. So the Lord said to Solomon, because you have done this, and you have not kept my commandment which my and my statutes which I have commanded you, I will surely tear the kingdom from you and give it to your servant. Nevertheless, I will not do it in your days for the sake of your father David, but I will tear it out of the hand of your son. However, I will not tear all the kingdom away, but I'll give you one tribe to your son for the sake of my servant David and for the sake of Jerusalem which I have chosen. So here God is. He essentially does the same thing he does to Saul. Because you didn't listen to my commandment, I'm tearing the kingdom away from you. And then here in this last section, we see the Lord's rebuke, 14 through 40. It talks about God raising up enemies for Solomon. He raises up Rezon, the son of Hadad the Edomite. He was an enemy of David when Joab killed all the sons from Edom. This guy survived, and he's of the royal line. And now he came back and started rallying an army and was a plague against Solomon. You have Rezon, the son of Eliada, and he had a marauding band, so they would go out towards the south of the kingdom and cause trouble. And then Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, and God gave him the kingdom. He was actually a servant of Solomon's. And an interesting element to this is he was a servant of Solomon, but Solomon, just like Saul, when he found out that Jeroboam was going to get the kingdom, sought to kill him and failed. And here again you see Solomon, all his wisdom and all his abilities, couldn't figure out how to kill one of his servants. So, but you also see he turned away from justice as well. You know, he's trying to, just like Saul, trying to spear David to the wall. And David, he says, "Far be it from me that I should raise my hand against the Lord's anointed." What does Solomon say? "Kill this guy, we'll keep the kingdom. I'm going to thwart God." So some people want to say maybe in his old age Solomon turned back. I don't know. I don't think it doesn't seem to be that way based on this text. And I mean, maybe you might speculate Ecclesiastes was written in older in life, but I mean, seems to me that he went down a pretty dark road with all of this. And so the Lord took the kingdom from him either way. So all that wisdom, no faithfulness, and he turned away from God. You see, well, how did that happen? You know, and there's, you know, some principles. How did that happen? You know, God says, don't be deceived. Bad company corrupts good morals. And, you know, the something simple God said, there's a lot of simple things God said. John? Yeah, and it seems that, you know, there's a few principles at play in here. One, like you're saying, right, is just discontent. Deuteronomy 6:5 says, "Love the Lord God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your might." And what this says is he didn't serve God wholly with his heart. Part of his heart was reserved for something else, and eventually, he went somewhere else. Julie? It was over time. Yeah. Yeah, and so he didn't serve God wholly, and so as he aged and as he became more and more callous, and that's what happens, right? You maintain sin in your life. You maintain violation of God's law, you become more and more callous. Something Jesus said is, no man can serve two masters. You love the one and you hate the other. Which one did he end up loving? Which one did he end up hating? You know, Jesus, that's a simple concept there.
There's no indication, as you said, that Solomon ever repented. There's nothing in Scripture that says that he did.
Yeah.
I've kind of held to the idea that with his work of Ecclesiastes, and the whole premise there is life without God is meaningless. Anything that we do in life without God is totally vain. It's totally empty. I thought that, you know, maybe that is a work of repentance of some type, but there's nothing in Scripture, you know, that confirms that, and he's not included in Hebrews chapter 11 as someone that we should, whose faith we should emulate, you know.
Yeah. So. I was thinking about that. I don't know if David's included in there either, though. He is?
David is.
Okay.
Also with Samson.
Yeah, yeah. So yeah, I was thinking about that. I was thinking there's a lot, maybe some people who are left out, but yeah, yeah. But yeah, you're right. There is no indication. We're kind of left to wonder, which is maybe the point. Is we're left to wonder how did that turn out, or maybe led to the conclusion. I saw a couple other hands, Mike.
See the signs of that happening, but that's the end result of whatever happened.
Yeah, yeah, he stopped serving God, and seems like when he started marrying extra wives, it was the beginning of that, right? And so you start seeing those things. Jim, did you have a thought? Okay, I thought I'd say it. All right, anyone else? All right, we're a little past time. Appreciate your patience. Let's go ahead and go to the Lord in a word of prayer.